Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morrison.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate it. We know you've got a lot of choices out there. Thank you to our sponsors. Our newest sponsor is Legal Shield. This is a fantastic service. I got hooked up with Tony Arterburn, who's my gold and silver sponsor, and he said that he had been with this company for over 20 years and that he thought it might be a good fit for me personally. So I looked into it and decided it was, and said, well, Tony, I think this might even be a good thing for the show in general. And so he put me in touch with his contact over there. Fantastic guy. I signed up for it. And let me explain a little bit what it is. It is the collective buying power of really good attorney services, a lot of legal services here. So they have a plan that costs about $1 a day, $30 a month. And what it does is it gets you access to an attorney, a law firm in your area, a really good one too, not one that's just staffed by a bunch of people that just got out of law school. The average attorney there has 22 years of experience. They work very hard. This is financially viable for them due to the, they focus all of the financial resources on one law firm, and it makes it worth their while. So now you have representation, which is pretty nice. But look, the reality of this is that you're going to need some things that you don't want to pay money for, right? Do you have a will? Do you have a will and testament for you and for your spouse? If you don't, you need one. It's just part of being an adult. Do you have medical directives? Do you have a financial power of attorney? These are all things that you need as an adult. Nobody wants to pay for this stuff because it costs thousands of dollars to do this. You have to go to an attorney, get it all done. But look, when you become a member of Legal Shield, you have access to your attorney. What you do first, the first month that you have this, is you set up an appointment with them. You say, I want to come in. I want to knock out all four of these documents and get it done. Okay. Now you've just justified your membership for literally years and years and years. It's paid for itself. So I think that this is something that we need to take seriously. You got to have this stuff. If you have problems with parking tickets, speeding tickets, things like that, if you have a contract that you need signed and you're unsure about it, if your work wants you to sign some new contract that has to do with some medical component to your employment there, look, you need to send all this stuff over to an attorney and have them take a look at it. So we've got a website specific for this. It's specific to this program. It's called www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. You can go take a look for yourself, see what you think. I encourage you all to at least go over there, look at what is offered. They they don't just have the legal plan. There's an ID shield. There's a home business component to it as well. If you run a home business, they'll take care of credit monitoring, reputation management, password managers. There's combo packs available for all this stuff too. So there's a lot to know. There's a lot to learn. I suggest just go to the website and take a look and see what you think. See if it's right for you. Don'tgetpushedaround.com. That's for Legal Shield. Thank you to them. We appreciate them. Also, one of our newer sponsors, Solar Power Lifestyle. We like them. Small company, small veteran-owned business. They like this show. They listen to this show. We like that. Look, if you are thinking about getting some, like a solar panel system, they don't have to get the big one for your house, although they have that there and they have financing available. But if you just want a little portable one and a device that you're going to take on road trips, you're going to take maybe to the work site, you just want to have it in case things get weird, go to solarpowerlifestyle.com, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself a bunch of money. They've got free shipping inside the United States. If you buy a product from them, then find it cheaper elsewhere. They have a price match guarantee, so you can do that. Free shipping on all products, financing available. They have the top names, Jackery, EcoFlow, all that good stuff. So I'll tell you what, just take a look. SolarPowerLifestyle.com. Use the promo code MACRO to save yourself some money and get yourself prepared. Well, I'll tell you, a couple years ago, I was at an Acapulco 2019, had the pleasure of meeting our guest, Josh Sigurdsson, host of World Alternative Media. It's great to see you. You like Mexico so much, you never left, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the first time I'd ever been in Mexico was at Acapulco 2017. And I love the country. I love the independence of it. And I also love what it entails in the coming crises, because obviously no place is perfect. Mexico is not perfect itself, but the supply chain is at your feet. And of course, basically everything is done with cash, and you can do whatever you want as long as you're willing to pay a cop like $10. So it's pretty all right.
Sounds reasonable to me. Oh, speaking of Acapulco, I'll be speaking. This, I wanted to let everyone know, if you're interested in going to this year's Acapulco, February 6th through the 10th in Acapulco, Mexico, you can go here. Max Egan will be there, Larkin Rose, David Icke, Dan Dix, Del Bigtree, Mark Passio, Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Carrie Madej, and I will be speaking there as well. So if you're interested, you can go to anarchapulco.com and use the promo code MACRO. Save yourself some money. They also have like kids camp too. So are you going? I know you're going to be. I know you and Jeff have a funny relationship.
Well, hey, look, I would like to. I'm not entirely sure yet. I'm still trying to arrange some stuff because early next year might be my window of opportunity to jump on a plane and go to some crazy places. And I have a few things up my sleeve that I cannot announce yet, but there's going to be some really cool content coming out later next year based on my travels. And let's just say the places I'm going are not what they consider safe places. So if I have room around there to go to Acapulco, I'd love to go. But otherwise, I'm not sure.
Well, hopefully we'll see you there. But this would not be the first time that you've gone to extremely unusual places, because the last time I talked to you, you were off on your way to Mauritania, right? To the deserts of West Africa, to the Rashad structure. Is that what we're talking about? Tell me, I'm curious, what was that like? Because I kind of followed you and I weren't really chit-chatting too much, but I felt like I was following you. I was following your travels. I would see your pictures of you like out in the middle of nowhere and in some van that you've been driving for like 2 days out someplace. You are doing it right, my friend. I love the fact that you're out there in these obscure places. What did you find? Like, what was that trip like?
Oh, so it's a big egg to uncrack here, but so here's the thing. I have always loved trying to go to places that no one would want to go to. When I found out, I watched this video by my friend Jimmy from Bright Insight, who I've since met and spent a lot of time talking to, very smart guy. He did a video on the Rashad structure called The Eye of the Sahara. And well, a lot of people believe it was Atlantis because it has three concentric rings, mountains to the north, exits to the south. It used to be underwater as an island at one point on the Atlantic. And of course, it's deep in the Sahara Desert. It's like 350 miles inland. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the least likely place to be Atlantis. But if you actually look at all the details that this guy at Bright Insight on YouTube put together with this, It gets really close to what Plato talked to and what his uncle spoke of when he wrote about it first. And it's basically on the Atlantic. It's right by where King Atlas was in history, King Atlas of Mauritania, and Atlantis is the island of Atlas. And it goes on and on. It's below the Pillars of Hercules, which is now, of course, the crossing between Spain and Morocco, which, of course, is Gibraltar. So anyway, the point is, when I found out about this, I thought it was really interesting. And then when I found out no one had ever really gone there and filmed it, except for like one person once on like, it seemed to film on a potato or something. It was just absolutely terrible footage.
Right.
I'm like, okay, well, I should go there. And I was hanging out with my friend Annam at a bar in Las Vegas, and we had a couple drinks, and I'm like, yeah, it'd be cool to go there. And he's like, well, why don't we? And I'm like, well, there's no reason not to, other than like money. Obviously, we'll have to figure that out. He's like, oh, we'll split on stuff. It'll be all good. And he says, meet me at this cafe in Sevilla, Spain on this day in May. And this, and I'm talking to him in January. He's like, on this day in May, meet me at this place in Sevilla, Spain. I'm like, okay. So in May, I flew down there, and it was kind of scary because I felt like I was walking into death, because it was like just the idea of going into this place that's covered in minefields, totally inhospitable, no internet, nothing. I'm like, oh, that sounds a little sketchy. But I literally landed in Spain, had my bags, met him with my bags at this cafe. And then we went to his place. I dropped my bags off. I hadn't slept. We went, watched flamenco music. And the next day we jumped on a bus down to the coast and then crossed the Strait of Gibraltar into Morocco, took trains, buses, and eventually we're just hitchhiking. And I mean, we were on the back of motorcycle carts. We were in a slave van, which I can't go into too much because I need to go back there eventually, but they still have slavery there. And like black slaves owned by Arabs. And then we were going through minefields, countless dead bodies. It was a scary experience. The more I got further down into Africa, like the top of Morocco is like a tourist place. As you get like past the town of Agadir in Morocco, you start to go like, whoa, what am I getting myself into? This is a little crazy. And before I know it, I'm like crossing a minefield. I have people pointing machine guns at me. I'm like, at any moment, I'm going to get kidnapped, because this is like, the government gives incentive to kidnap people there. They're like,
great.
Well, no matter what, if you have to be kidnapped for like 3 years, but that person will get $3 million. So $1 million a year, they make $36 a month on average there. So they'll kidnap you. And so
sounds like America.
Yeah, exactly.
And the cops will do that too.
Exactly. And, you know, I spent some time in hostels, just sewage running outside. There's a mosque inside the hostel and stuff like that. And couldn't sleep, cockroaches all over me, black mold everywhere. And eventually I'm like booking random drivers, just coming, going down the streets and putting my fingers together, like money, money. And people just crowd around me. And I'm like, yeah. I haggling with people about how much it'll cost to get there. And just for, you know, context, we have to go to the town of Wadan. Wadan is the furthest, most remote town in the Sahara Desert, right next to the Eye of the Sahara. And so there's two highways in all of Mauritania, one that goes all the way down to the very south by Senegal, and then one that goes in a V shape from there all the way up to where, to like the top of Mauritania, but the other side, there's no road to cut through. So you have to drive all the way south before going all the way north. And so I'm booking, you know, different drivers. We get to Wadan, and it was an amazing, a beautiful experience. I wanted to find more, but what happened was the guy that I had scheduled to come out there with ground penetrating radar to see if we could find anything in the ground wussed out. He had his ground penetrating radar there, and we get there, and this is like some Bernie Sanders supporting guy. I should have known. he's like, I'm not gonna use it because it's illegal. I'm like, we're in Mauritania. I haven't seen a cop since I've been here. We're in the middle of the Sahara Desert. Like, how enslaved are you to not just want to use? Like, so insane. And he refused to use it. And I was gonna pay someone else's way out to do this, but he was like, I saw your videos. I really want to do this. So I said, okay. So he paid his own way out. Then he refused to use it. So I'm shooting a documentary over there. And this guy at the end, as we get there, is like, yeah, I can't use this ground penetrating radar. So all we could do was surface examination. I did a lot of that. I had to, I literally ate salt off the ground. There's seashells and there's salt 350 miles inland at this place. And we found a lot of cool evidence. And it was interesting because after the fact, we got, I got picked up by National Geographic. They did a whole show on it. It was going to be the whole show, but they kind of blacklisted me during the lockdowns because I flipped them off because they refused. I didn't care about the money, but they wanted to pay me $2,500 for licensing footage. And I know how much licensing footage costs, like $45 a second. And they wanted to pay like $2,500 for 90 minutes of my footage. I'm like, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to do that. And eventually I'm like, okay, just give me 3,000. I don't care about the money. The point was Disney was pushing me around. I'm like, I'm not getting pushed around by Disney.
Right.
I don't care. They're a multi-billion dollar company. So they lost about $5 million on their show by me just withholding the footage until they paid 500 more, which was hilarious because I felt like I'm now blacklisted from Disney, but it's okay. I'm really proud of myself for standing up to them because they were like, don't you want to be on television? I'm like, no, I don't really care about being on television at all. More people on the internet. But anyway, so yeah, we found some interesting stuff and there's definitely evidence of an ancient civilization there. I think it was a natural formation, but it was built on top of much like the pyramids were in Egypt. And I believe that, it's some of the most beautiful people I've ever met were over there. The people I met on the ground there, I'll never forget finding, walking through the, burned out town of Wadan, that's 1,000 years old rubble, and people were still living in some of the buildings. Whoa. And I remember seeing this 5-year-old girl come out and she's wearing a Pokemon shirt. When they're younger, they're still allowed to wear American clothes. When they get older, obviously that changes. It's the Islamic Republic of Mauritania, so you can only imagine. But it was such a beautiful experience. The sun was setting. This little girl starts talking in French to me and I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. And she then starts speaking Arabic and then she starts speaking German and then she starts speaking English. And I'm like, this little girl who's never been to school, this is perfect evidence against, the nonsense of public school, public school system. This little girl's living in the middle of nowhere and knows all these languages perfectly. And it was such a beautiful experience. She's like, thank you for coming to our town. Let me know if I could show you around. I'm just getting water from the well for my family and all this stuff.
Wow.
And total, one of the only people I met out in Mauritania that spoke English. And just memories like that, honestly, are better than the Indiana Jones type stuff, like going through minefields and going through the reshot structure, because it was just perspective that I never had. These kids are smarter in the middle of Mauritania than they are in America with one of the best education systems in the world. Like, yeah, I think we found the truth there.
Well, I've had those that late night beers with Annam, and luckily it didn't turn at Benny Will's wedding. Me and Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers from 9/11. And I'm thinking, so we're chit-chatting. I know he's very persuasive. He could get you. He could talk you into booking a flight to the middle of the Sahara Desert pretty easily.
He was just shrugging. He's like, well, why don't we go? Like, let's do it. Why are we talking about it? I'm like, okay. I called him the next day. I'm like, were you drunk? He's like, no, I'm serious. Like, let's go.
But to be fair, you've hung around Berwick enough to know that like he gets these crazy ideas up in his head too, where he's like, oh, well, they say real anarchy's never been tried. Like, maybe you should go to Somalia. So he's like, okay, let's go to Somalia.
I've had to turn him down a couple times, Berwick, because I remember in March or May of 2020, he calls me and he's like, hey, tomorrow at noon, can you be in Mexico City at this hospital and walk inside with a camera? And I'm like, dude, it's 9 p.m. the day before. Like, no, I can't. I wouldn't be able to sleep. And I had to turn him down. And then he ended up, I'll just do it myself. And he ended up going, and it was hilarious because it was one of those whim things where in a lot of ways I might have done it if he called me at 10 a.m., but it was like 9 or 10 p.m. And he's like, tomorrow at noon, be at this hospital in Mexico City. I'm like, I'm in Puerto Vallarta. I don't want to wear a mask on a plane. Right. I don't think I'm going to be there. But anyway.
What did he find?
That there's no one at the hospital that they said was overflowing because it was on the news, smokestacks with dead bodies that they're burning in there. And then he went to a morgue right next door to the hospital. And they're like, no, it's our slowest year ever. Stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. You get a message from him every now and then. I got one from him. He says, we've done something unbelievable. You just go to the internet in 20 minutes and you'll see. And I'm like, oh God, what have you done now? And then it was the Epstein Island thing where he and Luke and the boys had.
Which drives me crazy, by the way, with all due respect to all of them. The fact I'm never going to forgive Luke for jumping into a dumpster and looking at the pizza boxes in there, but going into Jeffrey Epstein's office, opening the file cabinet, and he goes, oh, and then just closes it and walks away. I'm like, dude, files, there's files. That's what you look at. Videotape is, oh man, it just drives me crazy, but whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah, that was funny there. And Jeff's like wandering, he's barefoot. He's got a wine glass, a cigarette and everything. Like, this is not how you raid an island. You raid it with like surveillance equipment. Like, Josh knows how you raid an island. Come on.
I've raided a few places before, and I used to do when I was like a teenager, explore abandoned places back in before the days of TikTok. So I never unfortunately got any viral videos out of it, but I used to climb. I've been in mental institutions and stuff like that that were locked up in the middle of a forest. I love that kind of stuff. I love the Indiana Jones kind of stuff, but here's the reality. We're living in a point in time where I'm exploring these ancient civilizations that collapse, and our civilization is collapsing. So I felt this need in 2020 to take a rest from most of that and like focus on what's currently happening. And the news was so crazy in 2020. I probably went through like, oh man, 50 news stories a day and tried to crunch them in and make a pattern of you know, actually exposing this stuff so that it all combines and connects together. And I found no time to do my ancient civilization stuff. And even though I was living in Egypt for a point in 2020, which was amazing because I had the Great Pyramids myself and I had all these places. I went to places that no one has ever gone to in Egypt underground since the ancients. And other than the military people, a guy paid $20,000 and allowed me to walk underneath in the Osiris shaft. Which like no one had gone to other than I think Brian Forrester. So it's stuff like that. Like I, even though I had that at my fingertips and I did do videos on them, I have 46 documentaries filmed on ancient civilizations that I have not released. And it drives me insane because the news since 2020, it was like, what's more important? The ancient life, which I believe is important, trust me, but we have a civilizational collapse now. So at that point I went, okay, I'm going into war mode, nuclear mode. We need to explore how this great reset is going to have to affect us, how the economy, the supply chain, the cashless society, how, you know, the pandemic would affect us. And of course I had to basically go down that rabbit hole, get censored from everywhere and get blacklisted from all television for the until the end of time. So yeah. It is what it
well,
is.
Well, for everyone should check out World Alternative Media for sure, because and on band.video and elsewhere. Yeah. Because you've been doing good stuff for a really long time. But I want to ask you about Egypt, because when I was there in 89, it was like in between my junior and senior year of high school. And I went, and I don't know how it is now, but back then, like you could just go in the pyramid, like up the narrow stairs and into, I don't know if it was the king's chamber or the queen's chamber. It was one of the places, just big square, you know, room with a camera like embedded, you know, attached in there. Could you still do that now? Is it still as open to the public? Like I went in there with my American mentality thinking, oh, it's going to be like a big fence around it, and that here's the guard at the gate, and you got to show him, you got to buy a ticket and everything. It's like, fuck, there was none of that. It was just like, walk in, climb the fucking pyramids if you want to. Nobody stopped you. Is it still that wide open, or is there a little bit more?
Actually, it's even more open than it used to be. So, $15 to $20 will buy you a pass to walk around all of the pyramids, and including the Great Pyramid. You have to pay extra to get into the second pyramid and the Menkaure pyramid. But and the Menkaure pyramid was closed in 2020 due to COVID for some reason, even though they never had mask mandates in Egypt. Like there's never lockdowns in Egypt. I was so confused why that one pyramid was closed. But anyway, we did do a lot of exploring there. And actually, after the pyramids closed, not only could I walk around, you know, the king's chamber, the queen's chamber, all that kind of stuff, but they opened a subterranean chamber for us. We did a video over at World Alternative Media on this, where we got to, I was one of the first people ever to film in 4K underneath the Great Pyramid of Giza. And I did a, you know, point of view video climbing down the narrow tunnel. I had a cough for a couple of weeks after that because it's salty dust in there. It's just, it's a blizzard of dust. And I was covered in dust after. I had dirt all over me because at one point it's so narrow, you have to climb on all fours through a tunnel that's about a foot and a half high. So fuck you're that. Just squeezed in there, but it's only about like 10 seconds of climbing through that part. Most of it stairs down, I think 79 meters into the ground. And I only say meters because that's what they said there. And I don't know how to turn meters into feet. But anyway, the point is I went down there and I got to the bottom and it was one of the creepiest places I've ever been. It just, the feeling of it was, I shouldn't be down here. I feel like I'm in a reactor, a nuclear reactor of some kind. I felt like I was in a machine. I shouldn't have been there. Totally different architecture from the rest of the pyramid, but the same architecture as I saw in Derinkuyu in Turkey, the underground city, which was really interesting because this was underground. The Osiris shaft in Egypt is underground between the Sphinx and the pyramid. And Derinkuyu is an 18-floor, mega city underground that they don't know how old it is. Just massive place that connects to 250 other underground cities in Turkey, connecting the Black Sea to Syria. And I believe it connects all the way through Syria, through Saudi Arabia, through Jordan, through Lebanon, all those places, Israel, and into Egypt. And there's a lot of evidence of that. So it was the same architecture. There's this underground system there. And yeah, it was very easy to get around those places if you knew the right person. And I was on, I joined one of the Mehmet tours of ancient mysticism over in Egypt because I knew one of the people involved. I knew Brian Forster. Yeah. I knew.
I saw you talking to Brian at Anarkapulco when he was there. Yeah. You were interviewing him for that. And I was like, oh shit, Brian Forster's here. Like I was, you know, he's like a Graham Hancock type. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's a bit more alternative than Graham Hancock, but he certainly is like that. And he has done more exploring than almost anyone. He's written over 50 books. I mean, yeah. I've been trying to like put one book together for years, but tough. I don't have time. I could write really fast, but I have to take like a month off. And I could honestly write a whole book in a month. The problem is that I would not be able to get any work done and I would be on the streets sleeping in a van down by the river. So, you know, that's the issue. But Brian Forster's great, does amazing work. And he does hidden Inca tours. And anyway, yeah, I bumped into people like Ben from Uncharted X and all these people that just do amazing investigatory reports on these ancient sites. And I got access to places that no one has access to. And it was an amazing experience. But what I came out of it with was, so I went to all these temples and I went to Edfu temple and one of the temples talks about Atlantis and it's like before Plato ever wrote about it. And I'm like, okay, so there's evidence. It's called the homeland of the primeval ones on this wall. And it predates the writing of Plato on Atlantis. So it kind of backs up the story that there was this lost ancient civilization and it happened around 10,400 BC around the Younger Dryas. And that seems to match up with Noah's Ark. It seems to match up with the Epics of Gilgamesh. It happens to match up with the Mayan flood and the Hopi flood and all these floods around the world. So that was really interesting to see as well as the underground tunnels because they look the same everywhere in the world. And a lot of people believe that there was some kind of underground civilization that lived for possibly thousands of years underground. And after seeing the things I've seen in Turkey and Egypt and in many other places, for that matter, in Spain, even there's a bunch of underground tunnels. I've come to the point where I believe that there might have been some kind of subhuman race that lived underground at one point or another. And people say, oh, it's because they saw there was a war coming. So they built these underground tunnels and what? Spent 2,000 years building underground tunnels because the army was on its way. Like, that's the stupidest theory, but that's the academic theory. So take of it or make of it what you will.
Well, we've got Göbekli Tepe, right, in Turkey that's, what, 1% excavated, something like that? Like, hardly at all. We've got Hopi or Navajo proverbs talking about ant people that live underground. We've got, you know, there's sounds crazy, obviously, when you start talking about this stuff. We all acknowledge that, but it doesn't mean it's not true. I mean, a lot of things that are happening today that are crazy and are very true. So the idea of some hidden underground civilization, I'm open to it. Clearly, there is some evidence that all of these, you know, if you read Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock, you're talking about how you've got this same type of architecture showing up in places that should have no connection to each other, up in the Andes Mountains and out in Egypt and in Japan and all those sorts of architecture. And you go, this all looks kind of the same. And it's talking about this guy who comes and brings all this stuff. And they're all talking about the same, like, well, maybe, maybe there's something to it, right?
Like, yeah, well, like Quetzalcoatl, like it happens at the same time as they say Jesus goes to the West. And in Mexico, they have this thing called Quetzalcoatl, it's of the Aztecs. And suddenly they have some guy who's white with a beard. They describe him as white with a beard, who comes from the East and over the water, and then teaches them how to build things, how to teaches them languages, teaches them architecture, you know, agriculture. Shame, clothing, agriculture. Yeah, all these things. And, you know, the thing is, all the academics have been so wrong for so long that we have to really at this point assume that everything they're saying is a lie, because the Smithsonian has been clinging to essentially the same historical point since around 1823, when some high up Freemason wrote all these books on Egypt, and no one's been allowed to question it since. And in 1823, we didn't know a whole lot about ancient civilizations, at least most people didn't. And the fact that we're still going by those same papers from back then, like there's 250,000 year old bodies found in the United States, and they say, oh, they came over the Georgia Strait. Well, where's the evidence? They just showed up in the middle of Mexico. Like, where's the evidence? Like, they're just in Peru and Mexico. Oh, maybe they came from Pangaea. Doubtful, very doubtful. Again, like, there is evidence that there was international travel. And I don't know why people are so resistant to it. Because when I say technology, there's ancient technology. I don't mean like the technology we have today. I don't think like airplanes and like cars. That's not what I mean when I say, you know, ancient technology. I mean like different type of technology that we don't understand today, because things developed in different ways for different cultures. So again, I believe that all the ancient places of the world are an evidence of an ancient game of telephone. So they all have similar origins, but they're slightly different when they speak of it now, because over time it's been watered down in different ways in different parts of the world. And going back thousands and thousands of years, imagine how much stories change. So, but they're still similar enough where you have to go, okay, so they all believe an ancient flood happened in 10,400 BC, and it caused the whole world to go underwater and destroyed all these civilizations. And then the people who were left from these civilizations were called gods, because they had the technology that no one else did. So they taught all these other people how to utilize these technologies. And over time, their architecture got worse and worse and worse as history went on. It didn't develop, which is really interesting. And, you know, with that, we also found in 2011, the evidence at the Hiawatha crater in Greenland, that in around 10,400 BC, there is a massive asteroid strike that caused waters around the world to go up 30 feet and caused all the ice of the world to melt in a moment. And that killed 75% of mammals in North America, including the North American camel and the North American sloth. It's a giant sloth. And most of the Clovis people that lived there. And with that, you have more evidence that this caused a bunch of smoke in the air and led to basically a nuclear holocaust for a few hundred years, which could have led to people living in the ground, but also destroyed most plant life. There was fires all the time. And when that happened, it caused a mini ice age. And that's what we know as Younger Dryas. But the point is, this all just happened at the same time. And then we have like mammoths in Siberia that were found frozen, and they were flash frozen. They still had food in their mouth, and it happened in a second. And people are going to pretend, academics are going to pretend that we know everything about science and there's nothing to question. This is one of the things when COVID came into question where I'm like, okay, so we can question or we can't question ancient civilizations. When they use science as a political or religious hypothesis, then we lose the ability to learn. And when things started happening in January 2020 and I was studying these ancient civilizations, I'm like, oh, this is how it happens. This is how civilization collapses. And I did a documentary in October of 2019 called The Fall of Empires, talking about how civilizations collapse. I shot it in Rome at the Treasury, in front of the Colosseum and at the Pantheon, and talked about, you know, comparing ancient civilizations to today. And if only I knew that the plandemic would happen within a few months. Well, I just, you know, anyway, the point is, you know, all these things kind of repeat, and we are walking into something that has happened before. And there's a reason why ancient civilizations have been hidden and covered up from us. It's not only the spiritual side, where a lot of the elites are involved in some creepy, weird stuff that involves ancient snake gods and stuff like that, but it's also because they don't want us to learn from our history. They want us to be weak and stupid and dependent so that they can control us. So, and when, you know, I'll pull an Ernest Hancock here. He says, what do you mean by they? Well, they, them, those who shalt not be, the bankers, the politicians, the historians, the academics, the universities, the media, all these, you know, the coordinated attempts by elitist, you know, academics of the world that control the narrative so that they can take all of the, you know, hoard all the food when the supply chain collapses before it happens. They can get prepared for themselves because they think they're better than us. And then we all end up perishing into complete dependence, compliance, and technocracy. So anyway, it goes in a circle. And I believe that's probably a big reason why Atlantis fell too.
Well, it's funny because you go back a couple years ago pre-COVID and just, you know, and since we're talking about Egypt, you've got that was going to be a debate between Graham Hancock and Zahi Hawass that turned into this shouting match where Graham is just going, "You're such a chicken, you're leaving. You refuse to debate." And you realize that this guy has a stranglehold on the information, the narrative, and he will not give it up, and he will not allow anybody to challenge this. And it is very important that it is his way or the highway. And you go, God, you know, if we were being honest about digging into the past to get the truth, why would you be so resistant? You know, why is this guy so resistant to allow anybody to challenge the narrative? Because if it's true, then it's true. And so I saw that and I saw, God, these guys, man, they get in there and they get a hold on this information, whether they be, you know, I don't know what Zahi Hawass's technical name is, Egyptologist, Director of Egyptian Culture.
Director of Antiquities.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got that, and you go, oh, well, that's an academic. That's a guy that's also protective of reality, the truth, you know, whatever that is, the truth, trademark, registered trademark. And they have to defend it. And anybody that wants to challenge it, you know, you can't do that. And then COVID comes, right? And then we see, oh, they're doing the same thing. We've got the science registered trademark, you know, and you can't challenge the science because to challenge the science, any attack on science is attack on me, Fauci said, right? So we see the same sort of narrative management, narrative protection, you know, defending the truth, which I don't know, last time I checked, truth is the truth. It stands on its own. It doesn't need to be defended. It requires very little maintenance, but lies do. And these narrative managers are out there working full time, extra time, to defend anybody against anybody that wants to challenge it. That's not science to me.
Yeah,
it's the opposite of science.
I think the only thing that's objective in life is math. Everything else is a big mystery, and we all have our own perceptions of it. And
well, math's racist now. So,
oh yeah, I know. Statistics are racist apparently too. But yeah, well, I mean, there's a reason for that. But here's the thing. What you're saying is exactly right. I mean, what we're seeing the same thing from these academics that we saw throughout the lockdowns with people like Pfizer or like companies like Pfizer, the far leftists that would scream with a deer in the headlights look in their eyes with six masks on their face and 40 needles in their back. And, you know, they have myocarditis and they're yelling at us and saying that we're killing grandma. And no matter what amount of common sense you talk to them about, they will not listen. And you know, with people like Zahi Hawass, who, like, I don't care if I get sued, he's a complete fraud. And I, you know, the point is, this guy has been working with the British crown, which, by the way, the Egyptians hate. But anyway, he's been working with the British crown and, you know, there's and the Vatican and places like that. And it's interesting for a Muslim to be working with the Vatican. I'm just saying, you know, and there's a lot of questions that circulate that. I've spent a lot of time at the Vatican and they're hiding so much information and people blame it all on certain religions. But at the end of the day, the Vatican has a hall of records. Egypt has a hall of records, likely under the Sphinx from ground penetrating radar that we found. And of course, you know, Israel, the Dome of the Mound, they have a huge amount of records underground there and they banned all excavation and all archaeology at that site. And there's evidence at several other places, including there's one apparently in New York City. There's a lot of evidence that they are hiding a lot of these records throughout humanity because they know something that is so profound that we're only scratching the iceberg just a little bit. You know, we have people like Graham Hancock who do amazing work. And when you deep dive into his stuff, it's just so insane, so amazing what he's been able to uncover. And that's still like 0.001% of it. I'm positive this could be the information that we could need to understand humanity and life and the universe. And I think there's some people out there that know exactly what's going on. That's how they've been able to manipulate us, get around any attempts to disrupt the system, brainwash us. I think this goes so far that it cannot be explained in words. It has to be seen. So, you know, a lot of people believe, and David Icke mentions it quite often, like interdimensionalism, and it gets so crazy sounding. But I mean, this is what the Egyptians said. This is what the Sumerians said. This is what all these, the Mayans and the Olmecs and the Incas and the Aztecs said. And after a while, you have to say, well, they were right about most things, and they seem to have, you know, abilities that we cannot replicate today. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe the pyramid is a power plant. We know from phys.org, a study that was peer reviewed a few years ago, that it does still to this day concentrate electromagnetic energy and can actually move things. They've done cloud chamber research where pebbles were able to levitate with obelisks and stuff like that when they're shaking and vibrating. So again, it all sounds crazy, but look, what if they can lie about the last what happened last week in the media? Imagine what they can lie about from 3, 6, 12,000 years ago. I mean, it goes without saying that almost everything we believe to be true is a lie. And unfortunately, it's unlikely we'll figure it out in our life. But a big part of the adventure is searching and you know, trying to uncover as much of it as you possibly can. And that's why I went full Indiana Jones for a few years traveling. And I absolutely, some of the best experiences of my life. And I'm so happy I did it before the lockdowns, because that absolutely destroyed any opportunity to do those kinds of things.
I remember watching you, like following you. You were like, I'm in this city, I'm in this country, I'm in that, you know, you were just all over the place. I think it's interesting though, since we're talking about the Hall of Records and we're talking about Egypt, you know, you've got that obelisk there in Egypt, and then they've also got the obelisk at the Vatican, and they've also got it in the city of London, and they've also got it in Washington, D.C., and these are the three city states that are sort of among, you know, on their own, like their own little fiefdoms here. And for those that are dismissive of like, oh, that's ancient Egyptian history, like that doesn't matter to us, maybe, maybe not, but it seems to matter to them. The people that are in positions of power, they put these symbols in their little places where they want some sort of, like the city of London being this sort of banking haven, Vatican being this religious haven, and Washington, D.C. being the, oh, I don't know, military, I guess, if we had to assign it some sort of value, the military haven of the world. And then they've all got these obelisks. And so I go, well, you know, there might be something to it that we don't know. Like everyone walks by and, you know, Vegas at the Luxor, you and I both live there, and go, hey, I'm gonna take my picture in front of this. It's like, okay, well, just remember that there's some magic powers behind, or there's at least some sort of belief that there's something magical about that. And so maybe don't stand in front of the obelisk before you're going to go play craps tonight, you know?
and you know, there's a lot to be said about that. I mean, the word graffiti comes from Egypt. It's basically putting imprintation in graphite. I find it really interesting because, you know, in ancient Egypt, you find the oldest obelisks and they didn't have any hieroglyphs on them. They were simply bald, essentially. They were built and cut to a point. And I've been to the unfinished obelisk, by the way, in Aswan. And I've climbed alongside it, and I've tested it, and I've hit it with spoons and all sorts of stuff. And it's crazy. It resonates. And again, they've done cloud chamber studies on this where they actually move pebbles and stuff. So and the obelisks that you're mentioning around the world, those are Cleopatra's needles. So I've been to all of them, and I actually have been working on a documentary on those, but I think I'm the only person out there that I know of that has actually shot film and done narration and talked at all of these obelisks around the world. I haven't missed any. So there's one in New York City in Central Park. And there's one in Paris in front of the Louvre. There's one in the city of London, right next to the river. And they have two sphinxes there as well. And those are the Cleopatra's Needles. Now, there's other obelisks outside of that, but those all come from, I believe, Karnak Temple in Luxor. And I've spent a lot of time at Karnak Temple. It's the world's biggest temple. And there's still two left at Karnak Temple. And it was a big controversy that they took all of them. Actually, there's one other one that they took, but it's at the bottom of the Mediterranean. It fell off a boat because it was so heavy that it caused a boat to flip over while sailing from Egypt to, I believe, Italy. So yeah, there's a lot of controversy over it. But then they have these obelisks as well in Istanbul, where Constantine took over. And they have obelisks in Spain. They have more obelisks in Rome other than the one in front of the Vatican. They have multiple obelisks from Luxor. Very interesting. And I mean, actually, the ancient architecture in Rome itself was built using things that were already built by the Egyptians. I mean, the Romans could build pretty amazing things. People always undercut them. I think they could do a lot of what people say they couldn't do. However, they brought a bunch of Egyptian sandstone from the middle of nowhere in Egypt all the way to Rome to build the Pantheon. And these are giant, giant pillars, and they're not in multiple pieces like you see in ancient Greece. This is just one big rock. And to this day, it's still so well cut and carved that if you put your thumb on it, it still squeaks. It's still shiny. It looks like it was put up yesterday. It's pretty amazing and that's the biggest sundial, one of the biggest sundials in the world, the Pantheon. It was built by the pagans. And one more thing, you mentioned, what do they know? They have the symbolism, they have all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget what the dollar sign is. The dollar sign is a snake on a staff. Yeah. And, you know, they all worship these snake gods, and they are basically saying that you're in debt to these snake gods. And I think there's a lot to be said about that. And I find it very interesting that we have similar things in the healthcare industry as well. Snakes on a staff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people pass by it every day and they don't realize it. The U.S. dollar bill, the Novus Ordo Seclorum, pyramid with an eye. That's the eye of Horus or the eye of Ra, depending on which way it's drawn. And Ra was apparently born to the primordial floods of the ruins of an ancient civilization and wound up going east to Egypt and wound up on an island in the middle of nowhere. And it's kind of a gross story, but the reality is, this is what they say. He apparently masturbated, okay, and then ate what he made, and with that he birthed all these gods of Egypt. It's a really gross story. I won't go into any more detail, but that's what happened. And basically what they're saying is, through fertility, he birthed an entire civilization with a memory of the old civilization. And with that came the Isis, then one of his, I think, grandkids wandered the desert with Osiris and found the Sphinx covered up to its head in sand, and then uncovered it and found this pieces of an old civilization and built around it and built on top of it, renovated it and called it their own. So anyway, just a little rabbit hole.
Well, that's why Robert Schock and these guys were saying that, like, the weathering patterns on the Sphinx don't make any sense for it mm-hmm. to have been built when they say it was built, because it has water erosion on it. And that the last time that area was in a position where it would have had that sort of weather patterns was thousands of years before, predated when they said it was actually built. So their theory was, yeah, the three, you know, the three main pyramids are there next to the Sphinx, and you might make the assumption they were all built at the same time. But what they were saying was that Sphinx was actually thousands of years older, and that those pyramids were built
after. At the very least, it has to be about 14,000 years old, just based on it needs right. 6,000 years of rain to cause the amount of erosion around the enclosure. And it hasn't really rained much since 6,000 BC. Mm-hmm. And the evidence seems to point to it being from around 12,000 BC. So Yeah, it was around 14,000 years ago or 12,000 BC that it was built at the earliest. But John Anthony West has also said he believes it to have been either built around 33,000 BC or 21,000 BC. So he pushed it way further back. I'm not sure I believe that because I think there were other civilizations that collapsed before that. The Denisovans are great examples. And they found like what looks like wristwatches in caves from, you know, 30,000 BC. And there's amazing photos of these. And, you know, there's a lot of hoaxes out there. This one wasn't. And it was detailed in one of Robert Schock's and Robert Bruval's books from, I think it was The Mystery of the Sphinx. I don't have it on my bookshelf right now, but yeah, it was a, you know, there's so many amazing books like this. And if you fly a lot on planes, like I do, it's a good time to like, just open one of these books and get into it. You won't sleep for, even if you're on like a 12 hour flight, you won't sleep because it's just so interesting and so engaging. And again, like the mysteries of our origins are extremely important, especially now, understanding where we came from will help us understand where we're going. And we're going somewhere.
Yeah, we are.
Unfortunate right now. So it's time to get prepared for that.
Yeah, I think that is part of their whole master plan, is that if you want to direct people into where you want them to go, it's very helpful if they don't know much about their past, if they don't know who they are or where they came from or what they're capable of or who put us here or what the plan is. If they don't know any of that, then you can say, well, all that stuff's ancient history. None of it matters. You know, what you need to focus on today is getting out there and voting in the midterm elections. And you need to get out there and vote for the least awful candidate that we have. And then, you know, and so there's all of this, like, you know, most important election of our lifetime. It's like, okay, well,
that's what they say every time. We've only been doing this since ancient Greece at the invention of so-called democracy, which is two wolves and a sheep deciding what to have for dinner. And it is an absolute sham. I mean, again, if you were the president of the United States and you had good ideas, you'd be dead. It's all a scam. And as soon as people realize it, the sooner they stop voting for that system. If we go back into ancient Greece, and I've been to the Wall of the Nyx or the Hill of the Nyx, and where the original platform where they invented democracy on was, it's a horrible site. Very interesting ancient technology, by the way, that went into building their polygonal wall there, but that's another story. But they have been speaking about change since the beginning of so-called democracy. And, you know, after a while, they say, change, we need change. They get this guy. Oh, we need change from this guy. We need change, change, change. Eventually, people have to realize that the change is within. It's not without. So the point is, when we are dealing with these psychopaths that, by the way, I mean, I will say the same thing about Trump as I said about Obama. Trump was more entertaining and it was interesting to watch. And I don't dislike him for any of the reasons that CNN dislikes him. I dislike the guy because he was in a lawsuit with Epstein. He was in a lawsuit over a 12-year-old girl. And I'm not going to just shrug it off because of politics. This guy has been involved with some of the top elites in the world for years. And people act like, oh, he's not a politician. Oh, he's just a billionaire, but he's like really outspoken. Yes, he is. He also pushed Operation Warp Speed. And that's led to the death of thousands of children. He also was involved in putting Jerome Powell at the Federal Reserve, which has led to if someone else would have done it too. But the point is, he did this, which has led to one of the biggest economic crises in history. And it's a controlled collapse of an empire. They've been planning this all along. Henry Kissinger met with Mao Zedong in the early 1970s to create this monopoly for China during a collapse of their own economy and supply chain and a starvation event. That led to the creation of the Trilateral Commission by Zbigniew Brzezinski during the Jimmy Carter administration. Yep. And his dream was to create a technocratic world order superstate using China as a guinea pig. And now we, you know, fast forward from there, China is one of the most, you know, rich countries in the world. And meanwhile, they are purposely doing false flag attacks on, you know, the energy grid. They're purposely running out of fuel. They're purposely causing a collapse of the supply chain. And look how they did this. Bill Clinton looked like the anti-establishment guy because he played saxophone on TV. Then George Bush looked like the anti-establishment guy. And this is the type of people that people vote for. It's always the anti-establishmentarian, and usually. And Bush was talking about, I'm non-interventionist and I'm against the Federal Reserve. He gets in, does the opposite. Obama was elected because, well, he's black. And then Trump was elected because he said Bill Clinton is a rapist. They had to move it up to as high an extreme as they could. And now they got a guy with dementia who's pooping his pants in front of the Pope, who's in office. And look, it's all meant to go this way. It's called demoralization of the public. Yes. George Orwell talked about this. They want their own empire to collapse. They're pushing for their own empire to collapse while the people they propped up, Russia and China. And look, I'm not against Russia in the way the media is. I think Ukraine is a big part of the coup against humanity. But Russia's biggest ally is China and Israel. Where have we heard this before? The point is, Russia was propped up by the U.S. at the end of the Soviet Union, and they made all these deals. Now they broke those deals. And China was propped up, and now they are forming an alliance with India, which has historically been an enemy of China, and Saudi Arabia. And people think they're going to vote this away. Nope. What we're dealing with is the litmus test of COVID. That was just a start. It will be a drop in the bucket versus what we are heading towards. I've been talking about this stuff since 2006. And I wish to God that I was a crazy fanatic on the corner of a street screaming at traffic. But unfortunately, we've all been vindicated a lot. And now we are moving into the cashless society. They'll collapse our economy. To bring in the new world reserve currency at BRICS, which is cashless. It'll be tied to carbon credits, which is very, very convenient considering at the same time they're purposely destroying the supply chain. What happens then? Well, they put smart meters on your house to tell you how much gas, electricity, or water you're using. Give it to the government. It'll attach to your carbon credit score, which will tell you how much food rations you'll get and how much you can drive on the highways that Bill Gates is buying up and how much you can go into restaurants and stores. And it'll be a lot easier this time to say, oh, you're a denier of the climate. You're a denier of this crisis. You are causing your neighbor's energy bill to be high. No. It's that complete, you know, doublethink that we saw from Biden blaming gas stations for the gas prices. No. It's inflation. It's supply chain. It's restrictions against the oil industry. And just today, as we speak, Joe Biden did a speech and he said, no more oil drilling. Oh, isn't that convenient to exacerbate an issue? Netherlands is getting rid of 30% of farms, to go after nitrogen pollution. They're destroying the fertilizer industry. Canada and Ireland are following suit. The housing market is about to completely get decimated. And then everyone owns nothing and they'll be happy with their tiny house in a big city. And there will be no more sustainability. People will die with myocarditis and the people remaining will become technocratic slaves. It's all a civilizational collapse and it's all supposed to go this way. That's the way they want.
We can't even eat the people that die because they're all filled with spike proteins. So, yeah, you know, that's not any good. And look, you mentioned Trilateral Commission, and I just did an episode talking about this. Like, this is the power behind the Biden administration, because if you look at what the Trilateral Commission wants, open borders, end of national sovereignty, merging these banking systems together, one world government, obviously Rockefeller, Brzezinski, and you go, well, okay, so how do we know that the trilaterals are involved in the Biden? Well, guess who just dropped off or put their membership trilateral on ice, as you are required to do, before rotating into the Biden administration? Anthony Blinken, his second in command. Jake Sullivan, the national security advisor. The guy in charge of national security comes from the Trilateral Commission, which is interested in doing away with national sovereignty. You're putting the wolf in charge of guarding the hen house here. This is fucking crazy. But this is what's going on. So it actually makes more sense. I mean, none of it. It all sounds crazy and it sounds like a recipe for disaster. But if you understand the reasoning why they are making this disaster, you go, oh, this starts to make a lot more sense. Why would they even spend a dollar on the US-Mexico border when they plan on doing away with borders anyway? Right. Yeah.
And not in a way that would be good for voluntarists and anarchists and people that believe in consent. They're doing it to create one global government. And I've been saying this to nationalists for years. Look, the only thing better about nationalism versus globalism is that nationalism is smaller, but it's a smaller version of the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's smaller. So you have more personal control, but imagine how much more control you'd have over your own life if it went down to state and then it went down to city. And then it went down to community. And then we could work with each other on a free market. But everyone says, oh, that's utopia. Well, okay. Oh, and look at all these problems that could go wrong with it. Oh, yeah. Well, look at the current problems that we're currently facing that are 1,000 times worse than anything that could happen in that situation. They brainwashed us to want to be controlled. But humanity is based in the ideas of individual responsibility, freedom, consent, empathy, which they're trying to do away with. And they've successfully done that in much of China. So again, this is a war on humanity. It's not about money. It's not about power. Those are temporary tools to weaken us and control us. But that is all temporary. It's a spiritual war that they're fighting. It's the biggest human sacrifice in human history. Imagine all those people along the pyramid at Chichen Itza in Mexico and getting lined up and getting their throats slit to get eternal life. And that is basically what these psychopaths like Bill Gates think they're getting out of this. They know that they're going to get lynched. I'm not supporting lynching. I'm just saying they know that eventually people will fight back and they will slaughter the people who've done this to them. It's just human nature. But here's the thing. They're not worried. That should worry us. They don't seem concerned at all that they are going to be inevitably the ones that people go after at the collapse of the Tower of Babel that they are building. So that is why we have to understand this isn't about power. This isn't about money. That's just a temporary mechanism to weaken us and push us into servitude. This is spiritual. This is a sacrifice of humanity. They are getting rid of a huge chunk of humanity with the vaccines. We have a 163% increase in death year over year, according to Lincoln National, the fifth top life insurance provider in the United States. And it's backed up by hospital records. Just recently, Germany did a study where they did a 1,004-person peer-reviewed study on vaccinated people. 94% had pre-blood clot formations and crystallization in their blood of self-assembling metals that could cause blood clots. Italy did a study that was the exact same, had the exact same number, even 94%. In Taiwan, they recently studied a bunch of children that were vaccinated. 29% had some form of heart condition. That doesn't include cancer. That doesn't include, you know, autoimmune disorders, brain issues, Guillain-Barré syndrome. We are facing down the beast right now. And the people that are left, this is why they're going into the climate lockdowns next. And I've been saying this since 2020. In fact, my first video on the vaccines was January 22nd, 2020, 2 days before Chinese lockdown. I said, they're coming in with vaccine passes. They're going to use this as an excuse to lock us down, do all these things. Even the biggest conspiracy theorists that watched me were like, what are you talking about? You're insane. I'm saying now, and as I said back in July 2020, the next thing will be climate lockdowns because it works perfectly with technocracy. It works perfectly with the cashless society. It works perfectly to their benefit so that the people that don't die from the vaccine, the ones that are left, will have to sell their soul to stay alive. They will, you know, even the smartest people, I don't care how smart you are out there, if you don't have storable foods, if you don't have something to protect yourself and defend yourself, if you don't have water, you are not going to get through this because people could say, oh, people will stand up. Wishful thinking. I felt that way throughout all of 2020 and 2021 and 2022. And guess what? Now everyone's like, oh, it's over. Wait, where's the justice? Exactly. There won't be any anytime soon. We are moving into the next phase of the agenda. And if people aren't prepared, no matter how smart and intelligent and awake you are going out the back door. You're not going to win this because when they cut off your electricity and your water, and no matter how smart most of the people watching are, most people aren't independent enough to be completely off grid. Then you will go, well, wait, I need to heat my home during the winter or I need to have air conditioning during the summer. Tough luck unless you sign on to the carbon credit system. Oh, I need food. Tough luck unless you get some of this mRNA infused foods that they're creating at the University of California, backed up by Bill Gates or Johns Hopkins or in Washington State with the cattle or with the fruit and vegetables they're creating at the university in Mexico City. If you don't have your own preparation set, and people can say it's fear mongering all they want, go for it. Don't do anything if you don't want to. But the reality is we're walking into this. And if no matter how awake you are, if you need to take care of your family and you're not prepared and there's no food on the shelves, you will be in one of those ration lines. You will be eating mRNA infused foods. You will be in a world of hurt. And I hope to God that most people watching or listening will take this warning seriously. I wish I was wrong. I don't think I am. So, and the UN food chief, by the way, just said we expect a famine in the next year. The Belgian prime minister said 5 to 10 years of rationing ahead of us. And now we're seeing the same energy crisis here start to happen that was happening in Britain and throughout Europe 2 months ago that, you know, people back then were going, oh, it's going to be fine. It's just, it's fear. Well, now they're burning COVID face masks in Poland to stay warm. Think of how insane that is. So it goes full circle.
I knew we would get Josh fired up in this episode. I knew it. If we just kept going long enough, we were going to get him all. That's my favorite version of Josh. Josh, where's the best place for people to find you, your work, and support your stuff?
World Alternative Media on Band.video, BitChute, Rumble, Brighteon. I'm on Rockfin and I do some exclusive stuff on there. Oh man, where else? Odyssey. I'm on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all those as well. Podbean, you name it, you'll find me, except for YouTube. Though I do have a new channel on YouTube called Ancient Wonders that I'm going to see how long it lasts because I had another channel and I immediately got shadow banned the moment I started talking. So I'm like kind of incognito on this one, but hopefully people can subscribe on YouTube to our channel, Ancient Wonders. And yeah, I'm on a whole bunch of places at World Alternative Media.
That's Josh Sigurdsson, everybody. He's the best. He's going places you only see in National Geographic magazines and places, things like that. If you like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter @macroaggressions. Talk to you all soon. Thanks.